It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
So, Mark Stone. Defenseman. That's the title of this episode, right?
No.
God, come on. It has to be.
No, because it's too inside.
Too inside? It's not too inside.
No one's going to get it.
Everybody that listened to that press conference is going to understand. It's a lot of people. Like, I'd argue that's our entire listenership.
I don't know how many people are going to get that.
Mark Stone.
They're just going to think we're idiots. For putting Mark Stone defenseman.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose this is the first... Oh, by the way, Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. So, this is the first one that we've done since the last episode where we made the case for Mark Stone to become a member of the Golden Knights. Our trade package looked a little bit different than the one that the Ottawa Senators got in return, but Mark Stone is a Vegas Golden Knight. We're going to pat ourselves on the back. We are right.
Yeah, we rarely do we like make a bold prediction and then it comes exactly true, so that we got to make sure we soak this one up.
Yeah, so maybe this one will just be entitled Jesse Was Right. Although I don't think people are going to like they're not going to take to that as much as they would if you were wrong.
Yeah, I get a lot more attention on the negatives. Like, for example, when I tweet Fleury's got a shutout streak of whatever, if it jinxes it, tons of responses whenever he gets scored on. But then when he actually completes the shot, by the way, I counted. I tweeted the word shutout 9 times.
During his shutout streak.
Nice. And none of them jinxed it. So
jinxes are real though, right?
No, they are not real. But anyways, to your point, the negative obviously attracts a lot more attention than the positive.
Can I ask this question? How bold was it for the Golden Knights and their Twitter yesterday to start talking about how long the shutout streak was, and then they were going to tweet out every time it surpassed a movie. They were going to tweet out that movie. Like, I love it because it just further proves that jinxes aren't real.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person for this because I don't think it's bold at all because I think it's stupid. But not what they did was stupid.
No. The thought that what you say during the game on Twitter affects the outcome is...
So, it was great. I thought it was kind of clever. I liked it.
All right. So, about 20 minutes ago, I shot off a text or a tweet, asking for questions on the Golden Knights. And we've gotten quite a few replies. So,
thank you guys for replying.
Yeah. No, I didn't necessarily know how many we would get, mainly because we haven't done a podcast in like over a month. But, thank you all for still engaging with us. I guess the first one and kind of a theme in the questions from Nikki Stewart, Rebel Mom in LV on Twitter. When do you expect the Mark Stone extension to be signed? And let me tell you, one of the things I absolutely love about the fact that Mark Stone has not signed an extension yet is that there are a ton of people in my mentions constantly saying Mark Stone is not worth X amount of dollars. Mark Stone still hasn't scored a goal. Mark Stone hasn't found the back of the net. They're the same people that are in my mention saying, when is Mark Stone going to sign the extension? Like, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
The guy's really, really, really freaking good.
Yeah. I think that's very clear.
Like, it's evident how good he is.
Yeah. I don't think there's a person that watches these games that thinks Mark Stone isn't good.
There are people that do. There are people that equate the fact that he has not scored a goal to him not being very good. There are people that think...
There are also people that didn't think that was goalie interference.
Well, there are... The entire territory of Calgary. No, there are people even in this building, and I'm going to dump on Tyler Bischoff. He doesn't believe it. I know, because I've had multiple discussions with him. But I mean, there are people that see the tweets from Tyler and they're like, oh crap, Oscar Lindbergh has 2 goals. Mark Stone has 0. Therefore, clearly, Oscar Lindbergh is better than Mark Stone.
Yeah.
Derek Englund has 1 more goal than Mark Stone in the Stone Age.
This is true. But his Corsi has been fantastic. The high danger chances for and against while he's on the ice are unbelievable. He's drastically improved the power play just with his presence and calming, kind of like when the puck – I've noticed that they don't panic as much as they used to.
You know what's funny about that? And I think a lot of people look at Mark Stone. He doesn't get up the ice as quickly as, say, a Riley Smith or a William Karlsson. Like, he doesn't have the foot speed necessarily that those guys do. But what Mark Stone does so well away from the puck, he reads plays better than I think any other player on the ice. And there are often times where you see him, and it almost looks like, I don't want to say the word lazy, but it almost looks like he's behind the play.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, he's exactly where he needs to be to break up a play, to get a stick on a puck, to interfere with a lane. I mean, the guy puts himself in the right place every single time. Even if, like, outwardly, it doesn't look like he's in the right position, he is.
The issue with Mark Stone, his game is essentially perfect, except for he can't skate to save his life. He's one of the, he might be the worst skater on the entire Golden Knights team. Actually, no, scratch that. He's the worst skater on the Golden Knights. If Mark Stone could skate like William Karlsson, he'd be Connor McDavid. The problem is, he can't. He just doesn't. Like, when you watch him skate, and like now that we're, like, I've seen him in Ottawa and I've watched him on TV, but now that we're seeing him on a daily basis at practice and we're watching every game, like, it's very clear. His glaring weakness is he can't skate. I even had I'm not going to call him out, but a media member after, like, the second game with Mark Stone asked me, man, he's, like, way out of shape, huh? He looks so exhausted out there. And I'm like, no, that's just how fast he skates when he's at full speed. Like, he just can't skate. And like, every player has their weaknesses.
Right.
That's his. He's so good at everything else, and because he sees the game so well, he's thinking the game faster than everyone else.
Right.
And that kind of cancels out his inability to skate past people because he kind of knows where to go before the average player does. So even though it takes him longer to get there, he still gets there right on time.
Right. And that's kind of the thing when you're watching Mark Stone. If you're in the building, it doesn't translate so much on TV, but if you're watching him in the building, and you can even, if you're a little bit higher up in the building too, it certainly helps. But if you watch him skate and you watch him play away from the puck, not when he has it, but away from the puck, his head is always moving. Literally, he doesn't ever fixate on one part of the ice ever. And all that is doing for him is surveying as much information as possible, reading as many options as possible, and then making a decision on which one he's going to, which play he's going to make.
Yeah, and he's so smart. Like, you see it, like, I keep bringing back the power play. The Golden Knights, it seems like when teams play their, use an aggressive penalty kill and come out and challenge them, they panic, they make the wrong pass, the pass gets deflected, and it gets cleared.
Yep.
It seems like whenever that happens, the strategy now is get it to Mark Stone, he'll calm everything down, and then we can kind of get back into our set.
Well, the thing that jumps right out at me, at least with the power play, is I think the Golden Knights in the last five games with Mark Stone on the power play have made more passes that have connected through the box than at any other point this season.
The William Karlsson one was fantastic.
Yeah, and that's what you need. Like, if teams are going to be more passive on the penalty kill and they're going to give you that umbrella up top, you have to have somebody that can make a pass through that box.
Yes.
You have to.
It's the only way to beat the goalie, because the way you beat the goalie in a power play, other than deflecting or screening him, is moving him side to side. And when you're moving it around the umbrella, forward and on the half boards, to the defenseman at the point, to the defenseman at the other point, to the other guy, that's too easy for the goalie to kind of shuffle along with you. It has to be directly through the box is the only way you're going to get a pass to a guy before the goalie gets over there.
Well, because you're putting the goalie in a situation where essentially he doesn't have to move very much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, it's shuffling, right? It's not like a big push off to come out and meet a one-timer cross ice. It's literally just moving around your crease at the rate that the puck is moving. It's not going to be very difficult or challenging for the goalie. Again, it's not hyperbole either. Like, they have legitimately completed more passes through the box with Mark Stone in five games than they did at any other point in the season.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I mean, he's awesome. And to get back to the original question of his extension, I actually got a little bit of information today that I will be. So I'm double dipping. I'm giving you guys information on Rink Rats, and I'm doing a live Q&A with The Athletic, which by the time you listen to this, it'll be over because it's today. But I specifically went out and got some information because I know that's what every person is wondering right now is the Mark Stone extension. And I can say very confidently there's nothing to worry about.
I got a little bit of information too, and I'm hearing the same things.
Yeah, so there's nothing to worry about. The main reason it hasn't been signed is because George McPhee and Mark Stone have not been in the same city together since the trade.
Exactly.
When Mark Stone flew into Vegas after the trade deadline, George McPhee flew to Florida for the GM meetings, where he has been extremely busy at the GM meetings. They have these once or twice a year. He's busy all day, and this isn't something that he's going to do over the phone with Mark Stone's agent. He'd like to do it in person. Today... So what's today? Thursday? Thursday was the first day since the Mark Stone trade that they've had a chance to even talk to each other.
So what you're saying is relax.
Yeah. There's nothing to worry about. There's absolutely no hang up. There's no worry that talks have broken down. It's going to get done. They're not in a rush. There's no reason to rush it. He was out of town. They're gonna get it done.
Yeah, I am firmly in that corner as well. I look at the fact that in George's media availability, when asked about the extension, he said the outline is done. There's still a couple of things that need to be ironed out. I take him at his word on that. Mm-hmm. I think that those are situations that need to be ironed out when both sides can come together in one room and hammer it out. I mean, they agreed in principle to an extension on a 30-minute phone call.
Yeah,
you need to make sure that you're taking care of all the extraneous things, all of the stuff that fans really don't care about.
Yeah,
need to be ironed out.
And there are small things like no trade clause, and then once you decide whether you're going to do one or not, it's okay. How many teams is there? Is it 15? Is it 6? Is it 10? Is it 20?
Right.
Then it's okay. What years are you going to have these protections? Because most no trade clauses change throughout the deal. They become more lenient as the deal goes on. So, it's not about the money. It's more about the other housekeeping things, and they just haven't had a chance to even talk about it.
So, Mark Stone, we expect the extension will be done soonish.
Yes.
Okay. So, everybody, relax. It'll be fine. Once he signs it, then you can get mad that he hasn't scored.
Yeah, that you're paying $9.5 million for a guy that hasn't scored a goal yet.
I love sports.
It's the best. And hockey, and Tyler Bischoff says it all the time on his show, hockey is stupid. I can't think of a sport which rewards good play less than hockey. Hockey is one of those sports where you can play so amazing and not get rewarded for it. Whereas, like, in basketball, if you make an amazing play, you're going to get the shot's going to go in. You get the points for it. In football, if you make an amazing throw, it's a touchdown. In hockey, like, it's just great play doesn't get rewarded on the stat sheet like it does in other sports.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right because – again, Stone, when you go through the analytics, when you go through the advanced statistics, the guy's phenomenal. Yeah. And you can see the effect that he has had on this team, not just his line, not just with Stastny and Pacioretty, but what that line has been able to do from a matchup perspective for Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith. That, to me, is the biggest domino to fall in favor for the Golden Knights after the Mark Stone trade, is that line, that top line, has looked incredibly dangerous. They have looked very much like the line that they were last year. And I think a lot of that has to do with other teams now are going to be focused on shutting down Stone, Stastny, and Pacioretty. Because if you're not focused on shutting them down, they're going to burn you, right? So, like, you've got a game plan for that line. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, teams coming into Vegas or teams playing Vegas had a game plan for Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith. Now they've got a game plan for two lines. And let's be honest, I think most teams are going to want to shut down that second line more so than the first.
The third line was fantastic last night.
The third line was really good. There were a couple of instances, and I know it's a structure thing, but there were a couple of decisions in the neutral zone mainly Cody Eakin that I didn't necessarily like, where, you know, pucks coming out of the zone on an outlet and he goes back into the zone.
Yeah.
Those plays.
I remember one of the exact ones, and I'm like, what is he doing?
It happened at least twice,
and then
I want to say.
Behind his own net.
Yeah. And I understand that you're looking for something in that situation, but I like to keep the play going north-south, especially when you're with Brandon Peary and when you're with Alex Tuch. I think your best option is to go north-south. I don't necessarily know that you want to go back into your own zone and then put a forechecker right on Braden McNabb in that situation. Like, it just didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
There are a couple of puck management things that frustrated, I think, a little bit in last night's game. There were, especially in the first period, but the adjustments were certainly made in the second and third. I thought the Golden Knights in the second and third period last night were really, really good at taking care of the puck in their own zone, being poised, mm-hmm. waiting a little bit to make those outlet passes, not just blindly throwing the puck up the wall, because that's when they got into trouble in the first period. That's when Calgary had their best shifts, is when the Golden Knights had possession. There were plays to make, and they just didn't make them.
Yeah. My biggest problem with the third line last night was there was a play in the offensive zone where Alex Tuch absolutely manhandled the man that was trying to take the puck from him
mm-hmm.
for a solid 15 seconds, just toying with him like if you were playing in the street with your son or your daughter. Your daughter's probably a better example because your son's a little too young.
My two-year-old?
Yeah, okay. How old's your daughter?
She's 8.
Okay, if your 8-year-old daughter was trying to take a puck away from you out in your driveway,
yeah,
the way you would use your body to shield her, like, you're a child, you can't get this. That's exactly what Alex Tuch did to the Calgary Flames. And while he's doing this, Brandon Peary and Cody Eakin stood there and did absolutely nothing to get open, to find good ice, to find a soft spot in the defense. And the entire time, Tuch keeps looking up like, okay, when are one of you guys going to cut to the net so we can make a play here? He's been playing on the line with Pacioretty and Stastny. Those two guys are as good as it gets at finding open ice. I felt bad for Alex Tuch because he's making plays and not getting rewarded for it because he doesn't have offensive players with him. It's going to be a struggle for him. Things are not going to come as easily as they did on that second line. But if there's a player on this team that can get offensive production out of Peary and Cody Eakin, it's Alex Tuch. So I don't hate the line. I just sometimes I feel bad for Alex Tuch.
I feel badly for him too. There were, two instances where Alex Tuch set up Brandon Peary right in front of the net. And, I mean, they're great saves by David Riddick. They really are. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. They're amazing saves.
The one where Peary went five-hole and Riddick got into the butterfly, it was like a really impressive butterfly save.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's three high-danger chances that result off of two direct passes from Tuch behind the net to Peary right in the slot. You have to convert on one of them, right?
Yeah.
So So that kind of leads us to another question, and I've just got to find it here. But it was an update on Eric Halla. What the chances are that Eric Halla comes back and plays this year? Now, for those that missed it, it has been reported, it has been confirmed that Eric Halla has been on the ice recently. He's skating a couple of times a week, which is great news, obviously, for his rehab. Some might say that, you know, it's not necessarily the news that it would be if he was participating in practice. And yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but it's a step in that direction. It's not inconsequential, right?
Like, it's huge
it's
to me.
Humongous news.
I think
news.
It was underplayed almost.
I agree with you. And I remember, so we're sitting on the post-game show, and I think it was the Vancouver game, but I'm not 100% sure. And Gary Lawless had brought it up on the broadcast. And, you know, being inside the arena, I didn't actually hear mm-hmm. the broadcast. I had seen a tweet after the game, confirmed it. And then I'm sitting there like, oh, crap, we missed 45 minutes to talk about Eric Halla being back on the ice, which is a fantastic thing. We've heard atypical. We've heard not a common hockey injury. We've heard not exactly sure on the time frame. All of these things that you want to throw out there. But the fact that he's on skates, skating, testing that knee out, means he's got to be getting close.
Yeah, anyone who's listening who's ever stepped on ice with skates knows it takes an unreal amount of balance and stability. Your legs, when you're ice skating, to me, that's the big key to this, is you have to be so strong with your ankles and knees while you're skating on ice, or you could seriously hurt yourself. A guy coming back from a serious knee injury, there's no way he's going on the ice unless he's like 95% healthy. There's just no way. If Eric Halla is 60% healthy and you let him skate on the ice, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, which these doctors know what they're doing. There's no way Eric Hall is on the ice unless he is very close to being 100%. And because if not, he's going to be doing running drills. He's going to be in the pool. He's going to be doing things that on the ice with ice skates, one little tiny mistake, like you see, yep. How did he injure his knee in the first place? Just some small little thing where his skate got caught against the board.
Yep.
If he's skating and his knee's only 60% stable, it's going to happen again.
It's absolutely a
disaster. So this tells you, if he's on the ice, he's very, very, very close to being 100% healthy, which obviously is fantastic. We don't know when he's going to return, but this is not a, like, how do I explain it? Okay, like, if 100% is him playing in the game, mm-hmm. and 0% is him having surgery,
right?
Getting on the ice is not a, like, 50%.
No.
This is a 90%, a 95% step in his rehabilitation.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, you rehab an injury, and if you're an athlete, you start off by just trying to get back to your baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start adding the sport-specific stuff once you've established that everything is good to go and you can start loading in that way, right? So for me, this is all about skating-specific strength for Eric Halla. Like, I think he's done all the rehab that he can to make sure that his knee is put back together and it is solid and it is ready to go. Now it's about, okay, how much strength did he lose when it comes to skating?
Yeah.
How much explosiveness did he lose when it comes to skating? Where's his conditioning at? You get him on the ice, you see how the knee responds, you see how much volume and drills you can put him through, and then you start to see, okay, Eric Hall is coming out in full gear. He's going to start doing tight turns in the corner. He's going to start working on a lot of the different skating mechanics. And also, it's not only just about the skating strength. It's about the skill of skating. I mean, this is a skill that if you're not working on it constantly is going to fade a little bit. So it's not just about getting the strength back up. It's also about reacquiring some of those skills that have atrophied in the time that he has not been on the ice.
Yeah.
So once he's on the ice and comfortable, then it's going to be full gear. Then it's going to be full drills. Then it's going to be skating with the team. Like, we understand we're talking 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. But the fact that he's on the ice at all is absolutely news. And that question came from Patrick Downey, PDowney88 on Twitter. Thank you for the question. I believe Eric Halla will play a game for the Golden Knights before the end of the season.
I'm leaning that way, too.
Now, I don't necessarily mean the end of the regular season. I can see that working out in their favor. But I think before the Golden Knights are finished with their season, postseason included, Eric Halla will play another game.
I don't feel super confident in it, but if you told me right now, you have to bet one way or another, will he step on the ice for the Golden Knights this season? I'll say yes.
All right. Heather, HSimba44 on Twitter said, would you play Malcolm Subban Saturday in Vancouver?
Yes.
Yes. Like, that to me is a no-brainer. Now, yeah. I expect Vancouver to be much better than they were the last time they played Vegas in Vegas. I mean, that was as lopsided a victory as you're going to see for the Golden Knights. Now, Vancouver just didn't generate much of anything. But conventional wisdom would tell you that you want to have Marc-Andre Fleury ready to go against Calgary. That's going to be the tougher matchup. You don't necessarily want to worry about your goalie on the second half of a back-to-back. I like the idea of playing Fleury against Calgary and Subban against Vancouver.
It is mathematically impossible for a game to mean less than this Vancouver game. Like, it does not mean anything. It can't mean less. It means nothing. And, like, I know fans are like, I'm still going to watch the game and I'm still going to report on it and all the fans are going to watch it and you're going to live and die with every goal, but, like, it really does not matter. It has no impact on anything. So play Subban, let Dave Pryor get some more film on him. Like, we talk so much about playing Subban in relation to keeping Fleury fresh, which is the most important aspect of it. But there's also the aspect of Malcolm Subban's a restricted free agent at the end of this season. They're going to have to tender him. He's probably going to turn it down. He may want to leave. He may want to try to get a starting job somewhere. The Golden Knights need to know whether it's worth investing in him to keep him as a backup and a potential starter after Fleury leaves. The more film Dave Pryor has on him in game situations, the better he can evaluate Malcolm Subban's potential and whether or not he thinks he's a future part of this team. So get Subban as many games as you can down the stretch, especially these games like this that don't mean anything. It gives Fleury, they've got 2 days off in between, then Subban plays, then they have that back-to-back, Fleury plays. Then you've got 4 days before Dallas, so Fleury can play again. I think the way the timing works out, I would be shocked if Subban's not in net in Vancouver.
So my argument to this is very simple. How good has Marc-Andre Fleury been since getting a breather?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Right?
He's now 108 of 110 shots, I think.
He's allowed 2 goals in 4 games.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest.
Or 111, sorry.
He's been
0.982 save percentage.
He's been fantastic. So if I'm the Golden Knights, I look at that and I start finding ways to play Malcolm Subban. Now, Frank on one of the post-game shows asked me, I think, with 16 games left, how many games would you play Malcolm Subban throughout the rest of the year? I said 8 is the correct answer. I would go 50-50 split because, again, I just think that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to benefit from a little bit more rest down the stretch. I could see conceivably this team going 6, but 4 is probably the right option.
He's
right?
Getting 3 for sure.
3 for sure because the back-to-backs are definitely where you go. Now, can you find 2 or 3 more games to insert him into the lineup and still keep Marc-Andre Fleury on his game based on the type of rotation he wants? I'd argue yes.
Yes.
I haven't looked at the schedule enough to figure that out, but as it gets more condensed, especially after that 4-day break after Calgary before Dallas, I would argue that Malcolm Subban, you're going to see him quite a bit in the last stretch.
Yeah, and to me, there are only 3 games the rest of the season that Marc-Andre Fleury needs to be in net for. And it's this Calgary game coming up, and it's the 2 against San Jose.
I agree.
And it's not because of, like, oh, you need to win those games for the points. They're pointless. Like, I know people don't like hearing that. They're meaningless. Every game for the rest of the season is meaningless when it comes to the standings. Arizona's not catching them. They're not catching San Jose or Calgary. They're meaningless. But the mental aspect of it, we were talking to Nate Schmidt today. They didn't have practice, but they let us talk to Nate Schmidt after some off-ice workouts, and he mentioned the importance of last night's win over Calgary from a mental standpoint. And he said, like, yeah, every player has teams that they know that they play bad against. Mm-hmm. They have buildings. He's like, every player in the NHL has a building that you walk into and you're like, well, here we go again. I'm going to play horrible because I always do in this building.
Yep.
And if Calgary's last thought of T-Mobile Arena was a 7-2 win last night, when, say you play Calgary in the first round, when they come to Vegas, their last thought is, yeah, last time we came in here, we had an awesome time in Vegas, and we beat the hell out of this team.
Yeah.
You feel so much better, whereas when you lose, if Vegas goes up to Calgary and beats them, then that'll be 3 in a row that they've beaten Calgary. They feel terrible. The mental aspect of it leading into that playoff series is bad. Same thing with San Jose. If the Golden Knights can, if Fleury can play against those 2 games against San Jose and shut them down, say he lets up 1 goal in 2 games, they feel awful heading into that first round matchup. And I do think you can gain some mental edge on these teams in these final 3 games.
So here's a Mark Stone on the power play question.
Here we go.
Okay, from this one's from T Simpson LV. On Twitter, why is Stone playing a point on the power play? I'd think he would be better on the off wing for a one-timer or perhaps down low causing havoc.
I don't disagree with the down low causing havoc. He's Tuck with a little more skill and a little more experience.
Right.
I think they like him, and he's kind of on the point, but not really.
He's on the half wall.
He curls down onto the half wall, into the face-off circle, and he keeps shooting it high. I don't know. I think he's had like 5 shot attempts on the power play, and all 5 of them have went over the crossbar. He just needs to get the puck on net. I like where they have him in the power play.
I think he's the distributor, right? Like, he's the quarterback.
Exactly.
And you can't necessarily have your quarterback down low causing havoc because who's going to make the plays? Like, we've seen, right, that these players and the units before Mark Stone panicked, didn't get plays through the box. They weren't able to settle things down. Zone time was an issue. And now you've got a guy in Mark Stone who can play the half wall, who can quarterback everything from right there, who can find those seam passes, who can make the right read, who can tell, who can sit there and pass the puck back to Shea Theodore, who's on the point, and then start barking out orders and figuring out how to break down that scheme defensively. I think Mark Stone is exactly where he needs to be on the power play.
Yeah, I think, what was it, T. Simpson?
Yeah.
I think what his suggestions would give Mark Stone a better chance of scoring on the
right.
power play. The Golden Knights aren't trying to get Mark Stone to score on the power play. They're trying to get Mark Stone assists on the power play.
Yeah, like no, said, he's the distributor. He's got to be that guy.
The way that they are going about it is Mark Stone is going to get assists on the power play, not goals. What T. Simpson's saying would give him, if you put him in front of the goalie, there's a way better chance he's tipping home a goal, he's getting a rebound and putting it in. I just don't think that's the strategy that they're taking. And the way the power play's looked recently, I'm good with what Gallant's doing.
Yeah, I am too. I think you have your player with the hockey IQ, the highest hockey IQ on the ice. You have them quarterback.
Yeah.
You have them break down those seams and find those passes and make those right plays. And I feel like more often than not, if you put the puck in Mark Stone's hands on the power play and you ask him to create, it's going to result in more goals. Not necessarily for him, like you mentioned, but for the team overall.
Carlson's the biggest. To me, he had the one power play goal, but he's had a few other ones that, like, the puck just barely didn't get to him. I think the biggest benefactor of Mark Stone being on the power play is William Karlsson.
And I'm curious to see how the Golden Knights go about doing it, because right now Mark Stone is typically setting up on the right side. So he's playing the right side half wall. He's a right-handed shot. And you've got William Karlsson, a left-handed shot on the left side. I wonder if you don't try to flip that.
Switch them.
So you have both guys on their off wings. It sets up one-timers a lot better.
Yeah.
I think that's something schematically that the Golden Knights are probably going to look at and fix. But if Mark Stone's more comfortable on the right side and he's able to work better from that side of the ice, I don't know that you change it. You just try to find that one-time pass and hope that William Karlsson doesn't need to necessarily get a one-timer. It's much the same way that Austin Matthews scores a lot of his goals on the power play. It's not that it's one-timers. It's passes that get to Austin Matthews, and then it's just kind of a one slick motion wrist shot.
Yes.
If William Karlsson can add that to his repertoire.
Which is how Karlsson scored his power play goal a couple
exactly,
games ago.
Exactly. But if that becomes a higher percentage play, I think a lot more goals are going to go in for William Karlsson.
Agreed.
Ryan Kelly at SinCity_29 on Twitter. With both of our goals by defensemen last night, not a bad thing. Do you feel these lines are working? If not, what would you change and why? I understand that the goals were scored by defensemen, but the assists came from forwards.
Yeah.
And the work, especially on the Derek Englund goal, the work down low by the forwards is what allowed that shot to be an option and a really good option at that.
Yeah.
You had all the work down low. You have a quick low to high pass. You've got Englund with all the time and space in the world to walk in, improve his angle, and then the traffic comes in front of David Riddick at the right possible time. Like, those are plays, yes, that the defensemen score the goal, but it's really set up and aided by the forwards. I think the top line has looked as dangerous as they've ever been this year. The Stone line continues to create. Really, to me, it's about finding some consistency in game to game with your third line. What you're getting out of that line specifically.
The fourth line had maybe its worst game of the season last night. I thought they were terrible.
You know, it was weird because
they were stuck in their own zone the entire game.
I felt like, and I don't disagree with that. I feel like a lot of it had to do with poor decisions defensively on breakouts.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I mean, if you're Belmar Reeves and Carpenter and you've got Braden McNabb and you're Belmar in the middle of the ice ready for an outlet pass and the puck goes up the wall to nobody, I don't necessarily put that on them.
Yeah.
They get to running around. It is what it is. But, you know, for me, I was a little bit surprised at that line's lack of hitting.
Physicality, yeah.
The physical play wasn't there. And, you know, they're human. We get it. Like, you can't play that style every single time. You can't go out there and expect to have it every single night. But I felt like against Calgary, it was absolutely vital that they had it, and they didn't have that.
I think that's because they were stuck in their defensive zone. How many big hits has Ryan Reaves laid this year in his own zone? Basically none.
Yeah,
you don't
not
get
too
the
many.
Chances. It's all on the forecheck. It's all dumping it in and kind of catching them either at their own blue line or in the corners. They just played too much in their own zone. And, I mean, you're going to have bad games. I think the fourth line's fine. I like the way the lines are playing. Like you said, the defenseman scored. But, like, Derek England is not beating a goalie with a wrist shot from the point ever unless there's heavy traffic and screening. And there was. And England knew that. And it still takes an accurate shot. He still picked the corner.
Yeah.
But if Rittich sees that shot, there's no chance it's ever going in. But good shot by England. Like you said, give credit to the forwards for setting that play up, getting him the puck, and screening the goalie.
Betsy Vencius, I'm probably absolutely butchering that name, at Betsy Adventures on Twitter. What will be the biggest challenges facing Vegas Golden Knights in the playoffs? Update on Will Carrier.
Will Carrier.
I think he's getting close to skating, or he's been on the ice. There's really not much in terms of a timetable on Will Carrier.
Yeah, he blocked a shot with his arm or hand. I'm not sure which one is hurt, but I don't expect him to play anytime really soon. It sucks. And what sucks is he's going to come back, and then in two games he's going to get hurt again, because that's what William Carrier does. That poor guy. But it's, to me, I like what I've seen. Like I just said, the fourth line had a horrible game, but I think Carpenter can bring something to that fourth line that Carrier doesn't. And then if Carrier does come back, it's, to me, it's Reaves and Carrier cycling with each other, like going in.
Yeah,
and out of the lineup.
You know, I think Ryan Carpenter's found a spot on that fourth line, right? Like,
yeah,
with Belmar, I think he's been very, very good. I don't disagree with the idea of rotating in Reaves and Carrier when Carrier is healthy. But I also think, to your point, counting on Carrier to be healthy is not necessarily the right move there.
Yeah, it just sucks because Reaves and Carrier play the same game. The problem is Reaves is built like
to withstand
a freaking semi-truck.
Yeah.
So he just takes all this punishment that he gives and that he takes, and he's fine. Whereas Carrier is little, he's a little guy. And he just can't stay healthy. And he's not going to change the way he plays, because that's how he made it to the NHL. He's a wrecking ball. Like, it just sucks.
Nick VGK at Above the Rest. There's a couple of threes in there where the E's should be. Do you think Stone is the reason the team is playing more together and have more of an edge in key moments?
I do think there is a mental aspect to the trade deadline. I'm not going to say, like, I don't think Stone came into the room and said something. I think it's the fact that George McPhee went out and got the biggest fish at the trade deadline sends a message to his team. Hey, you guys need to get it together. We want to win the Stanley Cup. This is like, I do think that there has been a mental boost to the rest of the team just because, like, forget Stone's impact on the ice. Just the fact that George McPhee made that move changed the mentality of this team and got them going.
I completely agree. We've talked a lot in these 40 minutes about what Mark Stone does on the ice for this team. I don't think he came in and delivered some gigantic speech about being a leader and wanting to be a leader or anything like that. You talk to the guy for more than 3 minutes, you understand he's trying to fit in on this team, right? So mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely spot on. George McPhee sent a message. I believe this group is close enough to win a Stanley Cup. And I'm all in. I mean, this is all in, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be able to, after Mark Stone signs, I don't think you're going to be able to add very much when it comes to offense outside of what's already in the organization. So you're thinking Cody Glass's development over the next couple of years. You're thinking about plugging in some guys here and there on the fourth line as you lose unrestricted free agents, stuff like that. But you're not looking at a gigantic deal in the same way that George McPhee went out there and got Mark Stone. This is the guy that I think George thinks is going to deliver a Stanley Cup to Vegas. That all being said, it also sends the message to everybody else that your play needs to improve, you need to get better, because we've got the pieces here to win.
Yep, completely agree.
Positive Vadim at John March Mode on Twitter.
That's an excellent name.
It's great. Full breakdown of the skating stride of at Sinbin Vegas, please.
Looks like a skateboard is the best way to describe it. If you've ever skateboarded, you put one foot on the skateboard, or like a scooter too. You put one foot, that's stationary, and then you use your other foot to push. Ken basically plants his, I don't know if it was his left or his
it
right.
It was his left.
He plants his left foot.
So like if you were to look at the blade after he skated, the inside edge of his left skate would have just been untouched. Like there would have been no water or anything on it. He used the inside edge of his left skate for absolutely nothing.
It was fantastic. I wish I could have been there. I was in San Jose. That was during that second round playoff series. So I was not there. I was in San Jose when that happened. He's going to do it again. If for those that don't know, Ken Bulky from Sinbin bet Matt Hobbit 311
at Hobbit 311.
He bet him that they wouldn't get 85 points back when we thought they were going to suck last year. He had to skate. He can't skate. So he's going to do it again this year when they get to 85 points. He's going to skate. If you have a chance to go out there, it's hilarious.
I will, depending on what is happening, depending on when the event takes place, I will more than likely be there. I was there last year.
You gave him the snow shower.
I did,
right?
Give him a snow. I tried to get him like three times and he kept getting up. I didn't expect him to be that mobile when he was down on the ice. Like he got up to his skates better than he skated.
Oh, for
like
sure.
let's be honest, right? But yeah, I'm for sure looking forward to that again, because clearly he is not going to be improved.
Yeah, it's going to be
hilarious.
There's
no way. At Thanks Ottawa is the handle. It's Adios Brandstrom. It's great. It's a good one. He actually chirped me earlier because he saw the video that I took of the scrum after Tkachuk ran Fleury, and he's like, oh, you could see anything from up there? It's like, to me, it's the best place in the world. He's like, yeah, to you. Anyway, is Subban the answer for being the backup to Fleury going forward, or does McPhee look to fix this in free agency? If so, with what options?
Subban is one of the better backups in the NHL.
I agree.
There's nothing to fix.
Yes.
He's well above what you need for a backup goalie in the NHL, and he's young enough to have the potential to possibly be the answer after Fleury, so no. I don't see the Golden Knights going out and getting another goalie.
Here's another Mark Stone on the power play question that doesn't have to do with defense. Carlo at SomeDude88. Why do you think Turk put Stone in the first power play unit with the Carlson line instead of putting Tuck with them and leaving the Pacioretty, Stastny, Stone line intact for the second unit? My answer to this is because now you have two quarterbacks on each unit.
Yep, Stastny and Stone.
Stastny and Stone are your quarterbacks. Stastny needs to take control of that second unit. Stone is taking control of that first unit. That, to me, is the reason why you split them up. And it also breeds a little bit of familiarity between Stone and Carlson and Marchessault and Smith, so that if you do need to change something at 5-on-5 with your lines, you've got a little bit of familiarity there with their game. But to me, it all comes back to who's your quarterback, the two quarterbacks you have, the two guys with the highest hockey IQs, Paul Stastny, Mark Stone, they need to be in control of their own units.
Yeah, you nailed it. The only thing I'll add is I think there's a little bit – there's something to putting together power play units that aren't the normal lines, because guys kind of get excited playing. It's like when a coach mixes up the lines in the middle of a game, knowing that I'm not going to keep these lines switched. I'm only doing it to kind of get them going. I think having a power play unit with guys that don't normally play together, there's something to that.
It simplifies things.
It excites them. Like Carlson never gets to play with Mark Stone. He's excited to play with him on the power play. I don't know. There's just something to not having just the same guys that play on the same line on the power play unit?
Okay, so Vegas Misfits, at Vegas Misfits, what's a good pizza place that delivers for Ryan the Hockey Guy? I mean, Naked City Pizza was fantastic the other night. Oh, God, it was delicious.
It's good.
They've got, like, four vegan pizzas, which is pretty awesome. So, like, you know, it was my wife's birthday. We went out. We had a nice dinner, and I didn't miss anything. It was fantastic.
I am a huge pizza guy. Like, that's my favorite food, basically. Well, I like crab legs, but that's expensive. Like, my favorite, like, cheap food that's not, like, crazy expensive is pizza. And my favorite places in town, like, none of them really deliver. Does Naked City deliver?
I think they do on, like, Grubhub. So, like, I'm gonna have to look into that because pizza was really, really good. And it's a Buffalo bar.
Yeah.
And my wife is from Buffalo.
Naked City
so it's
a bunch
like
of times. It's good.
For me, Naked City was the win.
Yeah. My favorite places in town are Naked City, Giordano's, which is the deep dish Chicago style. And then the one that I feel like doesn't get enough love that people don't know about is Evil Pie.
Yeah, Evil Pie's got some vegan options too. I haven't been down there though.
Awesome.
Like, I haven't tried it, but
it's on East Fremont Street, so it's not on the canopy of Fremont Street, but a little bit further out, kind of by where like Inspire and Red and all those clubs are.
Yeah,
Evil Pie. It's named after Evil Knievel, and they've got all his like memorabilia and crap
up
on the walls, and they have some really good pizzas in there.
Yeah, mine. I mean, obviously, Naked City was fantastic. There's a spot called Pizza Company that's really, really good too.
It's just a little
hole in the wall place. Like, you just, it's more or less for takeout, but they've got some really, really good options for me, which is fantastic. AA Ron at TXP underscore Reaper or Rapper or whatever it is. Do you think Subban will be the future goalie for the Knights?
I think Subban is in a weird spot. I feel like he's the bridge to the next like franchise goalie.
Well, you talked a couple of episodes back about Jordan Coy,
yeah,
right? And you think that he might be that guy.
And Subban is the bridge to Coy because Coy's not going to be ready to be an NHL starter when his 3-year contract is up. Now, maybe Fleury, if Fleury goes Henrik Lundqvist and plays till he's 40, then yeah, Coy is the guy after that. We don't know. Like, there's no way to know. The thing with sports is guys can seem like right now, Fleury's playing the best hockey he's ever played in his life. He's better than he was when he was 25 in Pittsburgh.
Right.
That suggests he can play a lot further than his 3-year extension, which kicks in next year. But sports change so quickly,
yes,
and father time comes like that. Like, Fleury can go from having Vezina a year to, oh my God, he's old. And we don't know when that's going to happen. It could happen 5 years from now. It could happen next year. You never know. So it's tough to predict who the franchise goalie is because we don't know what Fleury is going to give you over the next 3 to 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, no, I tend to defer to you when it comes to goalie questions like that. I don't know enough about Jordan Coy to like really stake a claim. I think Dylan Ferguson has some really good upside, but Dylan Ferguson might also be in that kind of bridge territory too, like where if he doesn't develop in the way that you expect him to or want him to, he might not be the answer moving forward. Now, everything hinges on Marc-Andre Fleury and his ability to continue to play at a high level. If he continues to play at a high level, then I think Malcolm Subban's dealt before Marc-Andre Fleury's done being the starter.
Yeah. With Dylan Ferguson, I will say, like, it's fun to see how much these kids transform over the year because the first development camp that the Golden Knights had, it was at the Ice Center, and this is before they'd ever played a game as the Golden Knights. Ferguson was terrible. And it was like the goalie crop was Ferguson, Zukov, and Patera.
Yep.
And Ferguson was the worst of the three. Then he goes to Kamloops, he plays. He got to kind of be around the team for a little bit. He comes back the next summer, this last summer, and he was leaps and bounds above Patera and Zukov. He separated himself from that group, as clearly the top prospect in that age group, which so like right now I keep talking about Coy, and I have high hopes for Coy. I think he's going to be good. But if Ferguson comes back next summer and he took an equal leap, mm-hmm. all of a sudden we're talking about, wow, is Dylan Ferguson going to be like, could we put him in Chicago next year
right.
and play? Like, he could make, if he keeps improving at the rate he has, he could be a really good goalie for this team. So you never know.
So in other words, Oscar Dansk and Max Lagasse are not the future.
No, I do not think either of them have a chance at being a long-term starter for the Golden Knights ever in their career. I do think they're both doing really well in the AHL, and I like Max a lot. I don't know Oscar as well. I get to talk to Max a lot. I get to see him when I was up there in Chicago. I like the guy. I would love for Lagasse to be the starting goalie for the Golden Knights just because he's awesome.
Yeah.
But I just don't see it. They're a little older than the Ferguson Coy. They're the same age as Subban, and they're just not as good as Malcolm Subban.
LV Manatees Hockey.
Oh, here we go.
This is a good one. I like this one.
Just by the Twitter handle, I already know because these guys harass me a lot.
Oh, these guys roll with Patak.
Yeah, so a good portion of Patak's ice team plays roller with me.
Right, right.
So I know all those guys because they play roller with me.
If you could go to dinner with only one Vegas Golden Knight player, who would it be and why? Follow up, would you accept a dinner with Patak Attack 30 as a stand-in? So I've attended a game with Patak Attack, Steven Patak, and that was fun. But I would not accept him as a stand-in. And to answer the question, this is going to be really lame, but I don't know that I would go to dinner with one Golden Knight. Like, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury, because I feel like there's a ton of stories that will kind of be told, but like...
And he's hilarious.
And he's really funny. Like, he'll screw with the waiter, and then like, you'll ask him, like, dude, why'd you do that? I'll be like, oh, I didn't do anything. What do you mean I did something? What are you talking about? I mean, probably the easy answers are Marc-Andre Fleury and Nate Schmidt.
Ryan Reeves. Yep. Yeah, it's the normal.
Ryan Reeves I'd like to drink a beer with.
Yeah.
I think dinner would probably be Marc-Andre Fleury and Nate Schmidt. Those two guys just seem like they would have all the stories. Nate Schmidt, for no other reason than I just want to find out all the dirt on Alex Ovechkin. Like, all of the crap that Ovi used to pull, I just want to know how much of it was funny in the moment. Like, how much of it, like, looking back, there's still a little bit of salt there. Like, there's got to be something, right?
To my addition to that, because you answered it pretty fully, I'll just say I'll take Turk over all the players.
Man, that's a good point.
Give me Gallant over every player on the team.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
He's really funny.
He's the best. He would have better stories than any player on the
team. He's so good in press conferences.
Hockey was so much different back when he was playing. And I love when people ask him questions about when he was playing, and he just thinks back and he's like, well, it's not the same. Because back then, they were just animals. They were not professional athletes. They were animals.
My favorite Turk moment about just kind of letting loose, it was in a press conference where he made mention, like, oh, you can't run the goalies. Like it was like, how do you deal with the frustration of running into a hot goalie? He's like, well, you can't run him anymore. You'll get suspended. Like, I tweeted that out, and people were like, he was joking. Like, he wasn't serious. I'm like, I know he was joking.
But in
joking.
His day, that's how you
but
dealt
that's
with hot
what
goalie.
Happened. Like,
oh,
that's
the
what,
goalie's good? Don't worry. Yeah. We'll just run him over.
I mean... Like, that's not totally absent, though, from today's hockey. No. You saw the Calgary Flames do it yesterday. Like, that's – okay. From Alex G at VGK_702, how far do you see Vegas going in the playoffs?
Whew, that's – I need to see the matchups.
It's a loaded question. I really – okay. I'm going to preface this by saying we already know the Golden Knights' first two – matchups. Should they win in the first round and play in the second round?
I don't agree with that.
No, we do.
Calgary could lose to whoever because they're
Calgary. Well, okay, fine. But
that's what I'm saying.
Well,
it's significantly different
no,
if it's San Jose, Colorado.
Here's
or
the
San
thing.
Jose,
no, no, no.
Minnesota.
Here's the thing. San Jose is going to win the division. I think I 100% believe that San Jose is going to catch Calgary. I think Calgary is starting that slide that we anticipated happening earlier on in the season. Their goaltending is just atrocious.
It's bad.
It's really, really bad. So I believe that San Jose is going to win the division, and therefore they are going to finish first and get whoever it is from the Central, whether it be Minnesota, whether it be Colorado, whether it be Dallas. I don't see the San Jose Sharks losing to any of those three teams. I think San Jose is for sure going to win the first round. I guess that kind of hinges on Erik Karlsson and his health and whether or not he's ready to go, but I still think they could beat any of those teams without him. So it's Calgary and San Jose. I think they can beat both of those teams.
I agree.
So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility to believe that the Golden Knights could be back in the Western Conference Final. And I say that because if you look at those teams, you can throw – I wouldn't necessarily throw in Dallas because I think Dallas has been really good at suppressing a lot of scoring chances. Ben Bishop's had a phenomenal year. They've been good defensively, good goaltending, which is not necessarily the case always with Dallas, or hasn't been the case for a while. Mm-hmm. They can't score goals now. That's kind of the give and take in hockey. But for me, the Golden Knights have the better goalie when it comes to Calgary, when it comes to San Jose, when it comes to Minnesota.
Well, the Golden Knights have the best goalie in the Western Conference.
I agree. So I like the Golden Knights' chances. If everything else is equal, and I think the addition of Mark Stone makes them very equal with a lot of other teams that have a ton of offensive firepower. Yep. I take Marc-Andre Fleury over Martin Jones, over David Riddick, over Mike Smith, over whoever you throw out
over
there.
Over Hellebuck, over Rene, over Bishop, over all the Western Conference goalies.
What's your take on Nashville right now?
Really good. I think they're bored.
Yes.
It's this, like, the Golden Knights have even gotten a little bored. And this is their second year doing it, and it's all still very brand new. These teams like Nashville's been in the hunt for a Stanley Cup for how long now? 5 years? 6 years? It gets boring at the end of the regular season. The Predators have not been playing well lately, but to me, when the playoffs get here, okay, guys, let's play for real. And they've got a ton of talent, especially on the blue line. They're going to be really good. The benefit the Golden Knights have, now, obviously, they've got to win the first two rounds, but let's just say they win the first two rounds. The benefit they have is Nashville and Winnipeg are going to beat the holy hell out of each other again, which is what happened last year, and it went to Game 7, and then Winnipeg ran out of gas against the Golden Knights.
Yeah, they just had nothing.
Yeah, that's going to happen again. Now, say it's Calgary who makes it out of the Pacific. Whoever makes it out of the Pacific, say it's San Jose, they're getting Winnipeg or Nashville after an absolutely brutal series. Even if it doesn't go 7, say it goes 6, that's going to be a brutal series between those two because they're both really, really good. So the Golden Knights, the way the playoffs are set up is stupid, but it helps Vegas or Calgary or San Jose.
All right, so we're going to finish on this question because it's really funny.
Here we go.
And it further proves why I want to call this Mark Stone NHL defenseman. But Ty Caldwell at Preston Caldwell on Twitter, is Mark Stone the best defenseman in the NHL?
I think you're wrong.
That's what it is. That's the title. I think you're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, man. A Rink Rats mailbag. That's phenomenal. Oh, man. I'm going to have to make sure Ari tells me what this is so that I don't screw it up when I post it later.
I think you're wrong.
All right. So 57 and a half minutes is where we're at right now. We're going to put a bow on this one. Nice 1 hour podcast. You know what? I think we should just lock in Thursdays if we can. Like, Thursdays work generally. Maybe we can try to do that for the remainder of the season. We're gonna try our best, people. I know that you get mad at us because it's not always the most on-time podcast, but bear with us. It's a labor of love.
It is.
It really is. Now, what are you working on?
I'm pretty happy with my last two pieces that came out. I was proud of those ones.
Long Stick Nick.
Yeah, Long Stick Nick is the new brand wagon. So I wrote a story that came out today on Nicholas Hague, who's been phenomenal in the AHL, and basically his development allowed the Golden Knights to ship Erik Brännström to Ottawa to bring in Mark Stone. And not only him, I do mention the other guys down there, Dylan Coughlin, who, by the way, Rocky Thompson, coach for the Chicago Wolves, gave Dylan Coughlin an unbelievable compliment that I will not say on here. You have to go to the story to see. When he said it, it shocked me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Dylan Coughlin.
Now I've got to read the story.
Dylan Coughlin has been awesome down there. And not only him, but Hague and White Cloud. Still, every once in a while, I'll call him Hague because they made us call him Hague for a year.
It literally happened, people. So we weren't wrong.
Nick Hague, Zach White Cloud, Dylan Coughlin, Jake Bischoff. They've got a phenomenal defensive group.
Don't include Jake
Bischoff. But anyway, so I wrote that story. And then the story before that was a glowing piece on Gerard Gallant, the most popular coach in the NHL amongst players. How great was that poll we did at The Athletic?
It was fantastic. My only follow-up question on the glowing piece about Gerard Gallant, how salty are Florida Panther fans?
Very salty. And if the Florida Panthers presidents, CEOs, and owners, like, actually look at their Twitter account, they were very salty as well. So I wrote a piece. So in case you didn't know, The Athletic, we did an anonymous poll of the players, 200 players. We asked them everything from best player, most overrated player, best fans, best city to visit, worst city to visit. And one of the questions was, coach you'd like to play for the most other than your own? And Gerard Gallant won that category because he's a player's coach through and through. And I talked to Golden Knights players of just what makes him so much fun to play for. And Florida Panthers fans got a hold of this story, and they're obviously upset with their ownership for firing Gerard Gallant, and they just started tagging the owners in the tweets.
That's fantastic.
It was like 15 or 20 people tagged them in tweets. It was pretty funny.
How's that Wayne Gretzky on the podcast thing coming?
Wayne Gretzky on the podcast?
Yeah, remember?
I never promised that.
No, you have to come through now.
That's not...
I
could just call him right now and he'll
be on
the podcast.
You know what you should do?
If he answers,
listen,
he would be on the podcast.
So here's what we're going to do next Thursday.
We're not cold calling
next
Wayne
Thursday,
Gretzky.
Next Thursday, we are absolutely going to cold call Wayne Gretzky.
That's not happening.
No, come on. Like, shoot him a text. Be like, hey, Wayne, I do this podcast. It's really, really good.
I feel like Wayne Gretzky has more important
things. No,
Edmonton Oilers are burning to the ground.
That's a distraction. This is a distraction. Like, we're helping Wayne Gretzky.
Oh.
Yes. Listen, all I'm saying is put yourself out there. Just shoot him a text. Be like, hey, Wayne, Jesse, remember that story I did? It was fantastic. Good stuff. We got a lot of clicks. Hey, you have 15 minutes next Thursday? Don't even tell him why. Just say you have 15 minutes next Thursday. Bring him on the show.
Don't get your hopes up.
Well, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Who said that?
Wayne Gretzky.
There you go.
So you got to take the shot.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to take that shot, or we'll see.
All right. Well, I am Ryan, the Hockey Guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. You can hear me Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. with Frank Harnish on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, and also every single Golden Knights game, pregame, intermission reports, and postgame. It's winding down my first season in that chair, so that'll be an interesting thing to look at as far as how many times I went to air for the pregame report and was asked about my keys to the game. And every single time it's the same. The Golden Knights need to forecheck well. They need to forecheck really, really well.
Yeah. That's what's
the key to it's key to the game.
It's
right?
Key to life. Forecheck everything you do.
Forecheck the hell out of them.
Yeah.
You can follow Jesse at JesseGranger_ on Twitter, and be sure to subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. Hey, Jesse, what deal are you guys running this week?
You know what? I don't know if we have a deal that's like a percent off, but James Myrtle, who is the Toronto Maple Leafs guy, and he's like one of the first guys to
good kinda, follow on Twitter.
Yeah, he's awesome. He tweeted out, I don't think they've done the contest yet, but anyways, he tweeted something out. Just retweet that tweet and follow the Athletics NHL account, and they're giving away free Athletics subscriptions. So go do that.
All right. If we are men of our words, we will see you back here next week. Thanks, everybody.